Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
Glad to be here for this one.
Yeah, so imagine willingly putting your hands into these woven gloves, right? But they are filled with hundreds of the most venomous ants on earth.
Oh, man.
And you just have to endure that agonizing pain for 10 minutes straight, just to prove that you are ready for the realities of life.
It sounds completely insane to us.
It does. It sounds extreme. But today we're looking at two teachings from Pastor Tim Travis that ask a really kind of uncomfortable question. Like, is our culture terrified of the pain required for true lasting commitment?
That is the big question, yeah.
So our mission for this deep dive is to explore that profound weight of personal conviction and also that vital, honestly almost terrifying duty of passing that faith down the line to the next generation.
It's a massive topic.
It really is. So whether you are looking to strengthen your own resolve or you're just wondering how to guide the next generation, we are unpacking exactly what it takes today.
And, you know, it's a necessary topic, especially in today's climate, because we are looking at two of Pastor Tim Travis's messages. One is called Serving the Lord, Part 3, The Undeniable Call to Christian Commitment, and the other is The Heart of a Father, Passing the Baton of Faith.
Right.
And Pastor Travis basically diagnoses this modern condition that affects, I mean, nearly everyone. It's this chronic, almost allergic reaction to making permanent commitments.
A total allergy to it.
Exactly. And to understand the cure, Pastor Travis says we have to understand the disease first. He points to the Gospel of Luke chapter 9 to illustrate just how old this human tendency actually is.
Yeah, that passage always stands out to me because Jesus is interacting with these would-be disciples and their responses sound incredibly reasonable on the surface.
They
basically say, you know, Lord, I will absolutely follow you, but first give me some time to handle my personal affairs. And one of them specifically says, let me first go bury my father.
Right.
And if you read that through a modern lens, it paints a really harsh picture of Jesus.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you assume the man is in mourning, right?
Right.
Like the funeral is later that afternoon. And Jesus is coldly denying him the chance to say goodbye to his deceased dad.
That is the common misconception, for sure. But the cultural context of that Jewish idiom, it changes the entire meaning of the exchange.
Wait, really? It's an idiom?
Yeah, in that era, right. Saying, let me bury my father, did not mean the father was currently dead.
Oh, wow.
Right. It was a well-known phrase that basically meant, let me stay home, let me live out my current lifestyle, wait until my father eventually grows old and passes away, and then once I have settled the estate and secured my inheritance, then I will follow you.
Wow. Okay, so it was a polite request for an indefinite delay.
Exactly. An open-ended delay. The man was saying he would commit later, whenever it neatly aligned with his own schedule and, you know, his financial security.
It is the ultimate wait-and-see approach.
It really is.
It reminds me of how people treat, like, streaming platforms or gym memberships today.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Right. Like, everyone wants their spiritual subscriptions on a month-to-month basis. We want to keep the benefits of the service, but we demand the ability to cancel at any moment.
Whenever it gets inconvenient.
Yeah. If the workouts get too tough or the content isn't entertaining anymore, we're out. Signing a lifetime contract just feels suffocating to the modern mind.
And that fear of being trapped is exactly what Pastor Travis identifies.
Yeah.
He calls this living on situation ethics.
Situation ethics.
Yeah. Instead of deciding beforehand what our moral boundaries are and committing to them, we prefer to wait. We wait until we are actually in the heat of a situation to decide what we'll do.
But that's so dangerous, right?
It's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
The psychological flaw there is that our hearts are deceitful. If you wait until the pressure is intensely bearing down on you to decide if you'll be faithful, your biological and emotional instincts are going to take over.
You just go into self-preservation mode.
Precisely. Self-preservation will win. You have already lost the battle before it even started because you didn't commit ahead of time.
You know, he shares a quote in the teaching that perfectly encapsulates this. He says, discipline is what moderns need the most and want the least.
So true.
We live in an era where any form of restraint or, you know, self-denial is immediately viewed as a toxic attack on our personal autonomy. We equate discipline with oppression.
Which brings us to a really critical theological pivot Pastor Travis makes regarding Christian liberty.
Okay.
Because our culture equates commitment with oppression, we naturally crave freedom, but we deeply misunderstand what freedom actually means in a biblical framework.
Right, because the definition is totally different.
Exactly. Pastor Travis notes that many people use grace as a convenient excuse for the flesh. The logic goes, because I'm saved by grace, I am free from strict rules, and therefore I can live however my desires dictate.
But the biblical definition flips that completely. Pastor Travis argues that true liberty is not the freedom to sin without consequence. It's the freedom from the restraint of the flesh. Because before salvation, a person is basically a slave to their carnal desires. They literally cannot help but serve themselves. So Christian liberty means the chains of those worldly pulls have been broken, giving you the freedom to finally serve Christ.
And that service, well, it requires structure.
Yeah.
To illustrate how this works mechanically, Pastor Travis introduces this concept of the pyramid scheme of responsibility.
The pyramid scheme, yeah.
Yeah, so if you visualize a pyramid, the base is really wide and expansive, right? Down there at the bottom, you have very little responsibility, which means you have a massive amount of room to move around.
Like total personal freedom.
Exactly. But as you move up the pyramid towards spiritual maturity and especially leadership, that geometric space narrows.
So the higher you climb, the less room you have to step out of line. Your personal rights decrease as your commitments increase.
Precisely. You willingly surrender your personal rights for the sake of the people below you and the mission above you.
That makes a lot of sense.
And Pastor Travis highlights some extreme examples of this loyalty from Scripture, like Uriah the Hittite.
Oh, this is such an intense story.
It really is. King David tries to cover up his own sin by ordering Uriah to go home, relax, and sleep in his own comfortable bed with his wife. But Uriah refuses. He literally sleeps on the cold stone steps of the king's house instead.
The psychology of Uriah's choice there is just staggering, because he knows his fellow soldiers are out roughing it in the mud on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And his loyalty to the men beside him and the mission he committed to absolutely forbids him from enjoying the comforts of home while they are at war. He restricts his own freedom because of his commitment.
We see the exact same ultimate surrender in Queen Esther too.
Right.
She faces a scenario where entering the king's inner court uninvited carries an automatic death penalty. Right. But she commits to advocating for her people anyway. She famously declares, "If I perish, I perish."
She accepted the cost of climbing that pyramid.
Yes. She accepted that climbing to the top of that pyramid of responsibility might cost her her life. And Pastor Travis makes it clear that, you know, while we might not face literal execution today, taking a stand based on biblical convictions will inevitably invite severe friction.
Yeah, and he brings up a contemporary example to illustrate that friction, right? Pointing to those peace ball players for the Texas Rangers who recently faced significant public flack and I think even financial fines.
Right, yeah.
Because they refused to wear Pride Month gear on the field simply because it directly conflicted with their religious convictions.
And looking at that strictly as an illustration of his broader theological point, Pastor Travis connects their experience to Paul's warning in 2 Timothy 3.1. In the King James, it says, "Yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution."
So it's not a surprise.
No, his argument is that pushback is not merely a possibility when you commit it, is a guaranteed promise. The world will attempt to penalize your loyalty, whether that means taking aim at your public reputation or, you know, hitting your wallet.
Well, let me just pause and push back on the underlying premise here for a second, though.
Okay, sure.
Because if we are talking about suffering persecution, giving up personal rights, restricting our own freedom, doesn't that directly contradict the concept of grace?
How do you mean?
Like, doesn't demanding extreme, unyielding commitment just drag people back into the exact same heavy bondage that Pastor Travis says they were saved from?
That is a really vital distinction to make, and it hinges entirely on what you are actually tethered to. Pastor Travis addresses this by contrasting two different types of restriction.
Okay.
Being tethered to strict man-made rules in a desperate attempt to earn your own salvation. Yeah, that is indeed bondage. Is it like wearing handcuffs in a prison cell?
Mm-hmm.
It restricts your movement and just keeps you in the dark.
You are trapped with no upward mobility at all.
Exactly. But being tethered to God out of love, because you recognize the magnitude of his grace, that is entirely different. It acts as a safety harness while you are scaling a treacherous mountain.
Oh, a safety harness.
Yeah. Yes, the harness restricts you from leaping off the edge. It limits your quote-unquote freedom to fall to your death. But that restriction is the very thing that empowers you to ascend to heights you could never reach otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts the heavy anchors of worldly consequence.
I really like that. The harness metaphor perfectly sets the stage for what happens next, too.
So,
because once you lock into that harness and commit to the climb, Pastor Travis warns that you are stepping directly into a spiritual battlefield. The elements are going to attack you. So the question becomes, how do you endure the sheer hostility of the mountain?
And this is where we look at Paul's letter to Timothy, specifically 2 Timothy chapter 2. Now, Paul is not writing this from a place of comfort.
No, not at all.
He is locked in a damp Roman prison, facing his own imminent martyrdom. And the advice he passes to his young protege is just uncompromising. He tells Timothy to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ.
Endure it.
Yeah, he does not tell him to avoid hardness or to, you know, pray for the hardness to go away. He tells him to endure it.
And to visualize what enduring hardness looks like in a really visceral way, Pastor Travis brings up the Saturé Mauá tribe in the Brazilian Amazon.
The ant gloves.
Yes, the venomous ants we mentioned in the introduction. The reality of this ritual is staggering. Young boys in this tribe, as a rite of passage, must wear woven gloves filled with hundreds of live bullet ants.
And a bullet ant sting. I mean, it has a sting so agonizing, it has been compared to being actually shot. And the pain lasts for 24 hours.
And these boys have to keep the gloves on for 10 whole minutes.
It sounds like sheer barbarism to the Western mind. But when you examine the purpose behind the pain, it reveals a really profound psychological and practical truth.
It's not just torture.
No, the elders are not torturing the boys for amusement. They are intentionally preparing them for the inescapable, brutal reality of life in the Amazon jungle. By forcing them to endure the worst pain imaginable in a controlled environment, they are building a mental and physical tolerance. So when those boys eventually face a predator, or they get a severe injury out on a hunt, they won't panic and die. They will endure.
Compare that tribal wisdom to our modern cultural approach to parenting and mentorship today.
It's night and day.
It really is. Pastor Travis argues, we live in the era of the participation trophy. We frantically try to shield the next generation from every conceivable hardship, failure, or hurt feeling. We want to ensure everybody wins and nobody feels uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But by sterilizing their environment like that, we are doing them a catastrophic disservice.
We are creating fragile adults. If you never allow someone to experience the sting of a spiritual bullet ant, if you never teach them how to handle unjust criticism or how to navigate deep temptation or even just how to remain steadfast when a task is profoundly boring, they will shatter the moment the real world hits them.
Absolutely shatter.
Shielding someone from the reality of spiritual warfare does not keep them safe. It basically guarantees they will be a casualty on the battlefield.
And enduring those external attacks is difficult enough. But Pastor Travis points out a much more insidious threat to our endurance.
Yeah, the internal threat.
Exactly. What happens when we are the ones sabotaging our own safety? He uses this tragic story from Maine about a 65-year-old man named Ron Sear to illustrate this point.
The Ron Sear story is deeply unsettling, but it perfectly captures the theology of self-sabotage. Sear developed severe paranoia about intruders. So to protect his home, he engineered a lethal booby trap.
Right.
He rigged his front door with a hidden string attached to a loaded firearm, which was designed to shoot whoever turned the knob.
And the tragedy is that no criminal ever tried to break in. Ron Sear accidentally triggered his own trap one evening and ended his own life. He was killed by the very mechanism he built to protect his comfort.
It's awful. And Pastor Travis maps that tragedy directly onto Paul's warning in 2 Timothy 2.4, where it says, "No man that warreth entangled himself with the affairs of this life."
Right.
When we become entangled in worldly affairs, hyper-focused on securing our own earthly comfort, wealth, or status, we're actively setting spiritual tripwires in our own living rooms.
We think we're just indulging a little bit or, you know, protecting our interests, but we are rigging a trap. We literally become our own worst enemies.
Consider Damas, companion of the Apostle Paul. Paul notes with profound sadness that Damas ultimately abandoned the faith.
Why did he leave?
Well, Paul writes that Damas forsook him because he loved this present world. Damas tripped his own wire. His entanglement with the temporary pleasures and the safety of the culture around him caused him to lose his eternal perspective. He sabotaged his own endurance.
So if we manage to keep our eyes open, dodge our own booby traps, and actually endure the external bullet ants, it implies there is a finish line. But Pastor Travis does not frame this as a solo victory.
No, not at all.
The endurance is entirely pointless if we fail to achieve the ultimate goal, which brings us to the concept of the relay race.
The transition from enduring personal hardship to passing the faith is seamless here. The ultimate objective is transferring the truth cleanly to the next generation.
Yes.
And to demonstrate how fragile this transfer is, Pastor Travis shares a historical contrast involving the Adams family. Specifically, Charles Francis Adams, a prominent 19th century politician and son of President John Quincy Adams, and his own friend, Brooks Adams.
They both kept daily journals, right? And comparing their entries for one specific day is just heartbreaking.
It really is.
Charles, the busy adult consumed by his political responsibilities, wrote, "Took my son fishing today, wasted the whole day." He viewed the time away from his worldly entanglements as a complete net loss.
But on that exact same date, his young son Brooks wrote in his journal, "Went fishing with my dad today. Best day of my life."
Wow. If you are a parent or anyone who mentors youth, just think about the psychological weight of that contrast.
It hits you right in the gut.
What an adult classifies as an irritating distraction from their real work can be the very foundation of a child's worldview. Our physical presence and intentional time are the only ways the baton is actually passed.
And Pastor Travis makes that baton analogy literal by pointing to the Olympic relay. He notes the 2008 Beijing Olympics, where the U.S. men's track team was heavily favored but dropped the baton.
Oh, I remember that.
He also brings up the 2024 Paris Olympics, where a team was disqualified for passing the baton outside the designated zone. The lesson is brutal in its simplicity. It does not matter if you possess the absolute fastest runners on the planet. If the baton hits the ground, the entire team is disqualified.
The application for the church is stinging.
Yeah.
We can boast the most eloquent theology, build multi-million-dollar facilities, and recruit the most talented musicians. But if we fail to hand the exact truth to the youth, our speed and talent are irrelevant. It is a total failure of the mission.
And the mechanics of how we hand off that truth matter just as much. Because we live in a culture that worships originality.
Right.
Personal branding is everything.
True.
Pastor Travis illustrates this cultural mindset with this Food Network cupcake lawsuit. A woman named Elizabeth Lebeau filed a lawsuit because she claims someone maliciously copied her exact proprietary cupcake recipe and posted it online. The world's philosophy is, this is mine, I invented it, do not copy me.
But the biblical mandate demands the exact opposite of originality.
Right.
In 2 Timothy 2.2, Paul explicitly commands Timothy to take the things he heard from Paul and commit those identical things to faithful men. You are strictly forbidden from inventing a new spiritual recipe. You are required to perfectly replicate the old one.
Pastor Travis equates the failure to replicate this with a children's telephone game. If you whisper a clear phrase at the start of a line of 30 people, and each person slightly adapts, tweaks, or modernizes the message, the final person receives total nonsense.
Right.
When we try to make the gospel more palatable or original for the next generation, we tamper with the preserving power of the message itself.
He also mentions the infamous Rosie Ruiz scandal from the 1980 Boston Marathon. She wanted the glory of the winner's wreath, but she refused to run the miles. She literally hid in the crowd and jumped onto the course near the finish line.
Unbelievable.
Pastor Travis uses her to highlight Paul's rule that a runner is not crowned unless they strive lawfully. You cannot cheat the process, take spiritual shortcuts, and expect a reward.
Exactly.
But let me ask for some clarification here, because this can easily be misconstrued. Is Pastor Travis arguing for strict traditionalism? Like, does every church service have to look and sound exactly like it did in 1850? Are we forbidden from using modern technology to reach young people?
Not at all. He draws a very careful, vital line between the methods of delivery and the message being delivered.
Okay.
The methods must adapt to the times. Using social media, podcasting, or modern video production to broadcast a sermon is a new method, and it is entirely appropriate. The method is simply the delivery truck.
The truck, right.
But the message, the unvarnished preserved scripture, is the cargo inside the truck. You are free to upgrade the vehicle to make it faster and more efficient, but you are absolutely forbidden from opening the boxes and tampering with the cargo.
The cargo must remain identical.
Yes.
So we commit fully, we endure the internal and external hardships, and we pass the unaltered message forward. Which brings us to a really beautiful concluding concept. Enduring this grueling process is ultimately an act of profound service for those who have not yet run the race.
Pastor Travis captures this perfectly with the classic poem, The Bridge Builder.
Oh, I love this poem.
It's powerful. The narrative follows an old man traveling alone who comes to a treacherous, raging river spanned by a broken, dilapidated bridge. And through sheer grit, the old man survives the crossing. He is safe on the other side.
the natural human reaction would be to thank his lucky stars, wipe his brow, and walk away.
Of course.
But the old man stops. He spends agonizing weeks gathering timber and tools, and he completely reconstructs the bridge, making it solid and safe.
And a fellow traveler asks him why he is wasting his energy. The old man has already conquered the river. He will never pass this way again. And the old man explains that there's a young youth following the same path behind him.
Right.
That youth might not possess the experience, the strength, or the wisdom to survive the broken bridge. The old man is not building it for himself. He is building it to ensure the survival of the next generation.
It is the ultimate rejection of the toxic, I suffered through it, so they should have to suffer too, mentality. We endure the sting so we can build a sturdier bridge.
And history tells us that this is exactly the legacy Timothy inherited from Paul and the legacy he left for others.
Mm-hmm.
Church tradition records that Timothy eventually faced his own broken bridge. He was martyred for his faith, reportedly dragged through the streets behind a horse and beaten to death. Yet he never dropped the baton. He was willing to endure that horrific end because the bridge had been built securely for him. And he knew his steadfastness was building the bridge for the believers who would outlive him.
Which leaves us with a profound question for you, the listener. Take an honest inventory of your life right now. Look at the habits you are forming, the convictions you refuse to compromise on, and the time you are spending or failing to spend with the people who look up to you.
Yeah.
Are the daily choices you make simply helping you survive your own personal crossing? Or are you actively leaving a sturdy, safe bridge for the people walking closely behind you?
It forces us to ask if we are entangled in our own living rooms, protecting our comfort, or if we are enduring the hardness necessary to build something eternal.
It is a heavy thought, but it is the exact weight we need to carry. We want to thank you for joining us as we unpack these profound teachings from Pastor Tim Travis. If you want to hear the entirety of these messages, and there's so much more depth to them than we could cover here, full sermons are available on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can also visit their website at faithwayfbc.com for more information. Until next time, keep diving deep.